is a very special episode of the Let It Be Us podcast. I am Ross Cochran, and I have the privilege of hosting these conversations. And this is a critically important episode. Now, I want to be really clear that if you are listening, younger ears around, you may want to just listen with particular care, because we're going to be talking about some heavier topics today. To help me navigate this critical conversation is, of course, Susan McConnell, who's the executive director of Let It Be Us. Susan, thank you for doing this.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ross.
And we are also joined by Karina Santa Maria, who's the executive director of Shelter Inc. Karina, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Now, we are here to talk about what in the industry is known as CSEC, which is the commercial sexual exploitation of children. Karina, I want to start with you because this is an area which you are an expert. If people hear that, there is this natural guttural disgust response, right? Mm-hmm. But can you help kind of paint a picture of just, I'm going to use the word academic on what that term is referring to and why it's so critical that we have a conversation about what this term actually means.
Sure. So the commercial sexual exploitation of children is exactly what it sounds like. It is children who are being sold for sex or being purchased for sex by either pimps or traffickers. We see that it happens a lot with youth in foster care. I teach a human trafficking course at Dominican University in their Graduate School of Social Work. And one thing that I always ask in the beginning of my course is, where are the number one victims of trafficking coming from? What country are they coming from? And, you know, I often hear Thailand or Asia or Mexico, because that is something that we think, you know, it's not happening here, but it's actually coming our own children. It's coming from the United States. So the majority of youth who are being trafficked are kids in our own backyards. They are kids who oftentimes are involved with some type of system. So either whether it be juvenile justice or DCFS, or maybe their youth experiencing homelessness. There's also a big population of LGBT youth who are being trafficked. It's something that we need to be aware of and we need to look out for, because it is happening all around us.
Yeah. Now, when you say majority, I think one of the things that's really important for any of these conversations is we talk about scope and stats. Like, when you say majority, what do you mean?
Yeah. So obviously the data is something that is hard to get just because of how underground a lot of this is. There's some initial research that came out of the University of Pittsburgh that said about 300,000 American children were at risk of being involved in commercial sexual exploitation a year. Just in personal communication with DCFS, they do have a specific department that works with CSEC youth here in Illinois. They see about 500 plus kids a year in the department who are victims of trafficking. And then a few years back, there was a study done in the Chicagoland area that shows about 16 to 24,000 women and children are involved in sexual exploitation every year here just in Chicagoland.
There's part of me that would just love to end the conversation right there and just be like, so that's what we're dealing with, and force folks to just accept that part of the reality. But thankfully, there are ways for people who are listening to help. And what I really, really, truly hope those of you who are engaged in this conversation enough to continue to listen understand is that the last thing I want you to do is to listen to this podcast and go, wow, what a really good conversation. There are ways to get involved, and we're going to unpack that through the course of this conversation. And one of those ways, Susan McConnell, you actually were the instigator behind this conversation, bringing us together to do this. People know you from Let It Be Us, but can you help folks understand what your connection to this conversation is and how the world of CSEC and the world of foster care are so connected?
I'm working on a doctorate degree in social work at the University of Southern California, two-thirds of the way done. And I worked with a team at USC to build a concept for an emergency shelter that was actually accepted in the state of California for CSEC youth. Hmm. And so it was through that program that I learned about this. I'm not an expert like Karina, but I do have experts on my staff at Let It Be Us, Vanessa Bai, who is the Director of Licensing and Placement Support. I would call her an expert. And I have some of my professors at USC that are definitely experts. Dr. Annalisa Enrile is a USC professor, and she specializes in this. And she's actually the professor I'm working with for my capstone project for my doctorate degree. So that's where I come to this. But when I thought it was interesting when you asked Karina about statistics, because the data is very important here, Ross, and we need to get better at keeping track of the data so that that can help us take the solutions and target them to the right areas.
Yeah. And, you know, the data tells part of the story. And as Karina said, this is so underground. But I think one of the things that's important for people to begin to wrap their head around, as Karina said, this happens in our neighborhood. You know, it is because of the, I'm trying to think of a different word other than perversion. So, but because of the nature, the grotesque nature of this problem, it is easy for us to try to create distance to it. And that is a natural human impulse. And I don't judge you for having it, dear listener. But when we do that, it's important to recognize that what we are doing is we are creating a distance to actually helping these kids. And the work that we're talking about is actually trying to get closer and hopefully actually help these kids live a better life and ultimately find some healing. Now, there's a couple of different things that are already happening. I want to zero in a little bit on Illinois. Karina, we are having this conversation right around the time that the Super Bowl is coming out. Can you help folks understand both the significance of this time of year, but also what the sort of lay of the land, if you forgive the cliched expression, looks like in the state of Illinois?
Sure. So it's perfect timing for two reasons. One is January is National Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And then there's been a lot of, you know, previous and current awareness around the Super Bowl and human trafficking specifically, because we know that it is a hot day for trafficking, right? Pimps and traffickers utilize the supply and demand of economics, unfortunately, and bring in the kids around the Super Bowl, knowing that there will be purchasers of sex and knowing that they will be able to make money. We definitely need to pay attention to the Super Bowl. It is something that there's many, you know, operations and undercover stings that are present, but then we kind of forget it happens every other day after that as well. And so I think it's something that we just have to be aware of, that this increased heightened response to the Super Bowl, but it doesn't end there. And we need to know that it's continuing to happen. Illinois is pretty progressive when it comes to trafficking laws. We were one of the first states to have a Safe Children's Act. It was one of the first states to say, why are we charging children with prostitution when they can't even legally consent to sex? Because prior to 2010, that's exactly what we were doing. I will tell you that I still have to have many conversations with law enforcement to tell them that a 16-year-old can't make a choice of being involved in sexual exploitation. And so that is something that I think the continued education, the continued awareness, bringing this up, understanding what trafficking looks like here in Illinois, is something that we're just going to all have to advocate for, because it does, unfortunately, there's a huge intersection between foster care and trafficking.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why Karina and I are here together, because we've been working on projects together, and this really, really affects youth in foster care, children in foster care. They come into foster care, they've already experienced extreme trauma, they have mental health concerns, they have a minimal support system to begin with, and then they're being removed from their support system. That automatically makes them more likely to become trafficked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the way that Karina put this was, you know, we have to be aware of what this looks like. And while there is no universal description of what a child who is being trafficked looks like, there are some common characteristics that people can be on the lookout for. Karina, can you help folks understand, you know, what are some of the basics that may cause someone who is observing something in public to go, I should pay more attention to what's happening in front of me?
Sure. Well, so the number one indicator, and I know that this is something that you don't look and spot and under and know right away, but over 90% of youth who've been involved in commercial sexual exploitation do have a prior history of child sexual abuse. So if you, so let's start with prevention. We need to make sure we have prevention efforts in schools, as parents, as foster parents. That's something that's very important. Children who may not be, who may be experiencing homelessness. That's another big indicator. A lot of that survival effort, they may have to turn to survival sex just in order to have housing or food or some type of shelter for a time being, just to survive, not being in control of their own documents. That is also another indicator, not having any documents specifically. And we see a lot of branding and tattoos, and sometimes it's not even in the places that you think. Consent traffickers have gotten really good at putting tattoos, even like at the on the inside of someone's mouth, to brand them or to make sure that they know that that is their property, so to speak. Having two cell phones is another big indicator too, and I know a lot of schools are looking at that as well, because they know that there's one cell phone that they used for their everyday life, and then there's another one that their trafficker may use in order to keep control of them. So those are just a couple of indicators that are some red flags that we need to be aware of.
Yeah. And Susan, for you, you know, there's a lot of foster parents who are listening who are going, like, either they've seen this, and many who I'm sure have had to figure out ways to deal with this, regardless of how equipped they felt going into the specific case with their child or not. But there are also, easy for me to say, resources available to help those, you know, there's services and resources that need to be available to victims of CSEC. And there are some that aren't available. Karina said that Illinois is fairly progressive given the state of the country. What do we know already that is already in place, just again, from kind of a macro level?
Well, from the one thing I do want to add to what Karina said first was that we can see this ourselves too when we're in airports, when we're in restaurants, when we're in hotel lobbies, when you see youth who have no luggage or no coats.
Sure.
And it's okay to say something. It's okay if you're in a restroom to say, are you okay? Or to call the police just to, you know, just to check it out. I mean, what's important is if you see something, you say something. But one of the things that is most important is that we have homes for these kids to go to. And we need all kinds of homes, including homes that are led by single women and women gendered homes. So, and that's where Let It Be Us comes in. That's where Shelter Inc. comes in. That's where agencies like ours come in all across the country, where we can have these homes trained, specially trained and waiting.
Yeah. And I think it's important for people to understand, you know, it's easy, especially in conversations like this, to think like, there's nothing to be done. There's nothing that I can do. I'm just one person. This is such a macro problem. And the reason we start with kind of laying the land in education is because education is actually one of the first things you can do. Karina, you alluded to this earlier. Just us simply having this conversation is something to be done. But there is obviously more to be done. And I want to, Susan, I want to stay with you here for a second, because youth in care are particularly at risk. We've touched on this a little bit. One of the reasons, just to summarize this, is because of the ways in which they are isolated. And if I'm a foster parent who has received a child on care, and if I've maybe suspected that this might be a child in a child's history, or that this might be something that might be going on, but up to this point is new information, right? I'm the first one dealing with this. What would you recommend I do as a next step?
Well, that's where your relationship with your agency comes in. And that's where your own personal training when you get your license comes in. That's why we like agencies. We prefer to work with agencies like Shelter Inc. because their eye is on this and they will be there for you to offer support. There are also programs that are coming out, right, Karina, from DCFS. We're working with Shelter Inc. right now on a program for emergency foster care where they add extra resources and extra people to help so that you definitely aren't alone. But you know what I want to add, and I don't mean to hijack this question, but going back to prevention, did you know that one of the things that's new is they're giving Uber and Lyft drivers training so that they can see what goes on in their rearview mirror and they can see if they think any of these kids are alone and involved in this, and truck drivers too, truck driver training.
Karina, why is that important?
Because these are people who typically come into contact with victims and may not even know it. So having them understand the red flags, truck drivers specifically. I did a lot of work in Miami, Florida, and they had talked about, we had actually gone to different truck stops and talked to people who had worked there. And we had one server who worked at the truck stop restaurant who talked about, oh my gosh, I saw this man come in all the time with all these children. And they were different children every week. And I just thought, wow, he must have a lot of kids. And now after the training, she started realizing that he probably was involved in trafficking. So we all come into contact with victims every day. We might not be aware of it. Especially if you're working with vulnerable populations. I also want to emphasize that I think that while we do all, it is an issue that happens in the city and in the suburbs and all around us, it is an issue that disproportionately affects youth of color. And we need to be aware of that as well. Making sure that all of the isms that are in play with all of the different social justice issues that we work with also exists because of trafficking. And so there's a lot of stories that I hear about, people going to Target and being afraid that their child's going to get kidnapped. And while that may happen, that's typically not what trafficking looks like. But we need to pay attention to what's really happening, because unfortunately those stories are taking away from what really is happening and not building the awareness that's needed.
Yeah. And one of the things to drive right at that, I think a chief concern folks might have is, Susan, you earlier said, see something, say something. And I think especially in today's world, so many folks are terrified of saying the wrong thing. What if I say something and it's not actually a thing? Or what if I say something and it just creates more embarrassment or more issues, or even if it is a thing, but somehow the abuser gets away with it and it creates more issues for the children, right? We play out these cinematic scenarios in our minds very quickly. From a pure, you guys are involved in this every day kind of scenario, can you speak to the value of reporting without second guessing yourself because of how much this goes underreported? Karina, can start with you.
Yeah, I would say never undervalue your gut instinct. I feel like people know when something's just not right. Right, as a trained social worker, I like to say that too. Like once we get the uh-oh feeling, we know that there's just something's not right. So needing to report that. We know just general child abuse, a child typically tells about 7 adults before abuse gets reported. And so this is a part of that, right? Child sexual exploitation is child abuse. It needs to be reported. The appropriate parties need to be involved, and there needs to be protection and safety for the child. I think obviously we do have to, if we see something, we have to say something, but going with that gut instinct, if something's not right, I think you just have to listen to yourself and what is, and do the right thing.
And Susan, for you, when thinking about the world of foster care, even more broadly, knowing how much these kids have been through, we talk all the time about how easy it is for these kids to become invisible. So it requires folks to step out and say, essentially, I see this, in order for this child to not fall through the cracks. Is that a fair summary?
Well, the cost is too high. Doing nothing has too high a cost. And, you know, if we can help these kids and get the right services for them and protect them, it gives them a shot at life. Changes their lives.
The other thing that I think is often at play is kind of this like unspoken force in the way of this conversation is a judgment against this population, right? A sort of, it's easier for adults. So I'm not going to pretend that folks are saying this consciously about kids, but a sort of, this community got themselves into this scenario, right? So Karina, again, because you are someone who is an expert in this world, can you help folks understand how this happens to a kid? How this happens where what is said by a trafficker, what does that abuse look like, where what promises are made that put this youth in a position where even when they are potentially offered a way out, they may not actually follow it because they are abused to the point where they can't see that that is actually a better way out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My God, this is such a loaded question, but I'm happy you asked it. So there's many social and economic injustices that involve children in CSEC to begin with. And so we need to be aware of that. Again, the data shows that the majority have been sexually abused. They could be running away from home because of the sexual abuse that's going on at home. We know that majority of sexual abuse happens from someone that's either living in your home or someone that you know. So that initial trust is already broken. There's a lot of blaming by the, you know, victim themselves on them, and society doesn't help either. There's a lot of social blaming on the population too. The average age of entry into CSEC is 12, is what some of the data shows. But once that kid turns 18 years old, we think that they're an adult, they've made this decision, and they put themselves in that spot where most of the time they've already been involved in it for years prior to that. I think it's also important to look at the word of choice and what choice means. I am pretty privileged. I wake up every day and I can make a lot of choices of where I'm not food insecure. So I can decide what I want for breakfast. I have financial resources. So if something happens to me, I can learn how to navigate. I have friends who may be attorneys or doctors. And so I know who to talk to and who to ask. Oftentimes, this population comes from backgrounds where they are severely under-resourced, and so they don't have those options. And so choices to them could look like, I either have to listen to this man today, or I'm going to be beaten, or I'm going to listen to this man today and he's going to tell me what to do, or I'm going to starve. And so when we're all put in those scenarios, you know, it's hard. It's easy to judge on the outside, but not knowing how we would react when we're faced with those. So I think it's important to look at the word of choice, unpacking that and what that means, and understanding the social and economic injustices that this population is faced with every day.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's critically important because regardless of where you're coming from, for this conversation, regardless of your politics, regardless of your beliefs around some of the systems that create some of those injustices, one of the things that I cry out for personally is when this conversation comes to kids, that it becomes an equalizer. Mm-hmm. We can have a longer conversation about some of those systems once these kids are safe. But until these kids are safe, I don't really care about what your opinion is. I want you to help me get these kids safe. And folks like what you do at Shelter Inc., folks who are involved in the work at foster care, folks who are listening to this podcast, you're helping create a better life for these kids. Susan, this is kind of a broader question, but I'm curious for you. You know, you are someone who was obviously incredibly passionate about this work. You are one of the most heartfelt people I've ever met in my entire life. But you are someone who came into this and has learned so much about this world. I'm curious what has stood out to you. You weren't coming in from an outside perspective, but you were coming in from almost an academic perspective. Mm-hmm. Like, what has stood out to you entering, quote unquote, this conversation when you did?
Well, there's one thing that really, really resonates with me. But first I'll say, you think it's all girls, but it's also boys.
That's good.
In child welfare, in leadership, we often try to niche down so we can go to get funding. And I am often attracted to programs that serve girls, but then I think, oh my goodness, what about the boys? The boys are so forgotten, and we can't forget them in this space. But the thing that was the biggest eye-opener for me was that kids in group homes and in shelters are at even greater risk. And Let It Be Us in Shelter Inc., and a lot of the agencies, we specialize in placement, and we make sure before the sun goes down, we get kids in homes. We get them off caseworkers' floors and into the right home. And if that doesn't happen, they're often headed to the shelter, and that automatically increases the chance of a child being trafficked. And that just, that makes us sick. It makes us work really hard, makes us try to not let that happen at all.
Yeah. So I want to define that for people a little bit, and I'm going to give my non-expert definition, and please correct me where I'm wrong. Right. But if we use isolation as one of the biggest risk factors
for isolation, kids, right there, Ross, that's key.
As for kids to fall into this, if a child is in care, them entering a home is the least isolated possible outcome for them while they are in care.
Safest.
Them entering a shelter, while has certain parts of it that are safe, has the potential to be more isolating. It doesn't mean that a shelter, I want to lean into the fact that this is why the work of getting kids in homes is so important. Mm-hmm. And why I point people towards the work of foster care so often, because unlike so many of the isms that Karina was talking about earlier, and so many of the societal injustices, this is work that I fundamentally believe is, as a society, is actually solvable. It just requires the raising of all boats, and me getting to talk to you guys in a microphone is something that helps apparently get to do that. Karina, as we begin to land the plane here, I want to go back to you here, because I think it's important for people to understand, especially those who are continuing to listen, that there is progress to be made even while there is much work to be done, or there's progress that has been made even while there's much work to be done. Karina, I'm curious for you what you are looking for in this in this particular year, as this is what progress looks like. Because when people go, especially those of you who are still listening, you are looking for, hey, this is working, even though I know there's a lot of work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
So to make this a little bit more bite-sized for folks, what are you seeing coming in the short term as we work towards a longer term goal of CSEC no longer being a way to describe youth?
Ooh, this is a great question. So I think I have a couple of answers. One is, I think we need to continue doing the work on the prevention side. We need to be talking to our kids about it. I mean, there's even a lot of pushback about basic reproductive health education in schools, but those are meant to protect our youth. We need to be able to have those conversations. I know there's a push that those conversations need to happen at home, but the matter of fact is it's not happening at home. And so we need to talk about it. That's how we protect our kids, especially knowing how large the population is being sexually abused prior to being involved in CSEC. There needs to be a better push on training with anyone who may interact with this population. So I know from a Chicago police department training. If you were a police officer prior to 2015, there is no mandated training for you on human trafficking. If you became a police officer after 2015, you have a mandated 1 hour of training of human trafficking. I think that needs to be written into legislation. I think there's a lot of work that we need to do there. And our first responders, nurses, doctors, EMTs, they are dentists. They are seeing victims of trafficking. And I think that the training piece would be very helpful in having them help identify and report it so that we can provide services and ensure that these youth are safe. I also think that there needs to be more training for foster parents. There needs to be more foster parents, period. But also having the training for them to know how to work with the special population, because it is very different than any other population. And I would love to see, Susan and I are currently working together on trying to open up a shelter for youth who have been trafficked, because none of that does not exist right now in the state of Illinois. Right now, many of those youth are being sent to other states because Illinois has a law saying that we cannot have locked residential facilities. And so this population is being sent to other states to be locked in residential facilities, which is very counterproductive for that specific population, right? You would never lock a prisoner of war in a treatment facility because of the torture and trauma that they've endured, right? We wouldn't do that. We shouldn't be doing that here either. So having a very trauma-informed, survivor-led housing approach would be my goal for progress.
So that's the first I heard about that. What are some ways that folks can help with that, with any of those goals specifically? You know, you work with Shelter Inc. every day. What are some ways folks can support Shelter Inc.?
You know, check out our website, look at the different services that we have to offer. Host us for lunch and learn at your company. We love to talk about this so that we can train and educate people. Susan's wonderful team and Shelter Inc.'s team does many trainings for how to become an emergency foster parent. Please do come to one of those webinars or even check out Let It Be Us's webinars on just how to become a foster parent. I think that's something that's very important. Talk to your legislators, right? They have open houses. They have sessions where you can ask questions, and they need to know that this is something that the citizens of Illinois care about, and we want to do something different for these kids.
Yeah. Susan, I want to leave last word to you here, because you and the team at Let It Be Us are going to make sure that there's show notes and resources available for people who are listening, wherever they're listening, for some of the appropriate next steps that we've talked about. Some of the webinars, but also just the Illinois abuse line and some of the more general information that's been discussed. But this is a conversation that I think can often feel kind of hopeless. And yet, when you first approached me about it, and basically every time I've ever talked to you, Susan, there is a optimism and a hopefulness that just comes out of your pores. So at the risk of sounding a bit hokey, I am curious about what you feel gives you hope and how we continue this work, and how you specifically are continuing this work. I'll even ask this a different way, which is, people who are listening to this podcast are ready to go. They are the folks who are the most dedicated and the folks who are ready to take the next step. What would you want to make sure that every single person who's still listening does?
First of all, they could share this podcast. They could put it on their LinkedIn page. They could put it on their social media page. That would be super helpful. That's easy. And that would help get the word out, because raising awareness is really, really important. That's something people can do. If they're not ready to be a foster parent, they can be a CASA, a court-appointed special advocate. There's great training involved, and we have a lot of teens who need help. You could be a foster parent. Step up and be a foster parent, and at least come to Let It Be Us, work with Shelter Inc., and we'll see if we, you know, if that's the right thing for you to do. And then also a great call out to those who want to adopt. We're finding with the Family First Preservation Act, which is being implemented in Illinois, that they're going to better identify the kids in need of adoption. And so those are going to be opportunities to get those kids in the home, in a home, and one more time in a home, finally in a home, so they're protected. If you ever suspect abuse, you can call the DCFS in Illinois Child Abuse Hotline, which is 1-800-25-ABUSE. That's 1-800-25-22873. Or, of course, if you see someone in immediate danger, just call 911. If you see something, say something.
Susan, Karina, thank you guys so much. I would hope that folks who are still with us understand that, you know, I'm the dad of a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old, and knowing that folks like you are out there helping advocate for kids is what makes parenting kids like mine easier. So thank you guys for what you do. Thanks everybody for listening, and we will talk to you again real soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ross.
Let It Be Us, a foster care and adoption podcast, is made possible by the amazing team of experts at Let It Be Us. Check out the show notes wherever you're listening for more information about Let It Be Us and how you can help out kids in foster care today. This podcast is dedicated to the entire foster care community of parents, professionals, and donors who are doing everything they can to help kids in foster care across Illinois. This podcast is produced and hosted by me, Ross Cochran. The theme song for this podcast is Into Silence by Made to Be. And you also heard their song, You Know a Better Way. Thank you for being one of us. And thank you for listening. We'll talk again soon.